Mickey, you still with us?
Yeah.
You seem kind of low energy, Mickey.
I'm just very, very bored by all of you.
Well, thanks. What did I ever do to you?
You brought
you
him
on
this
the
show.
Did you both say the same thing?
Yes, basically.
Frightening, isn't it?
Well, it's scarier for the two of you, I would think.
What do you think I meant?
I thought you were giving some consideration to my feelings. Excuse me.
How the f*** would I do that?
Well, you got me there.
Superhero Time with your hosts, XV.
We're here to toss your salad.
Hey, Mickey.
Waka waka waka.
Paladin.
There is no wrong time for card games on motorcycles.
And Fort Max.
No.
So this week it's Battle Fever time, because our usual range of shows has been preempted for golf. Or in the case of Samurai, they've gone into delightful hiatus. But your regular superhero time has been replaced by 100 minutes of old shows and movie. Yay.
There will be very little difference.
No, probably not. So I am, of course, XV, also known as Battle Your Mom, if you know what I mean. Our politically incorrect panel includes Battle Tony Basil, hey Mickey.
Yo.
Battle Tex-Mex, Fort Max. I said Fort Max.
Wait. Battle Tex-Mex?
Yes.
I'm surprised you're not going for some Australian reference or something.
Battle Tex-Mex is funnier, because it makes less sense.
We could call him Fort Mix.
Fort Mex it is. And, of course, Battle Tim Curry, Paladin.
Hello.
So, Paladin, why don't you tell us about Tokyo Toy Show?
Well, they are showing off a few pieces of new merchandise, including a set called the Premium O Metal Collection. It has one of everything.
Price tag, 100 million yen.
19,000, so close enough.
Yeah. It's functionally the same for those of us over here.
And
the
is
downside,
it an exclusive
though,
or not?
I don't think so, at least not yet.
The downside to the set is it comes with the black medals, which means it acknowledges the movie.
It also comes with the box from the first episode, which is kind of impressive.
Well, more medals is more power. So anything else?
Yeah, the first actual look at what the Hurricaneer add-on will look like for Gokaio.
Oh, really?
And I can say with all honesty, it looks just as good as all the other add-ons for Gokaio.
Excellent.
Oh, really?
That is a pretty wide range there.
Exactly.
I just figured it was skewing toward the low end. Or you mean that it looks as good as all the other add-ons at once?
Yes.
I can't even begin to make heads or tails of this image.
Yeah, me either.
It has pointy things in its arms. That's about all you need to know.
Okay, well, we can wait for a better look. Or, you know, at least a bigger picture, because it probably won't look any better.
I don't think it could look any better, to be honest.
But that's a nice Gokai machine diorama in the next picture down.
It is.
They do put up a nice setup for these things.
I want that galleon with the full sails and everything. Why isn't that the toy we have?
Because Tim Curry.
Oh.
You say that like you'd be able to get it any more than the other toys.
Well, I wouldn't, but it would be nice to have the option. Or at least
just wait for the Bandai of America version.
Then it won't have sails at all.
Well, that'll take the wind out of your sails.
Shut up.
Wasn't there like some vinyl figure collection too going on?
Don't they always have those?
Back when they were on vinyl.
What? Huh?
Well, I said, don't they always have vinyl figure collections anyway?
Well, they haven't so far for O's, right? I mean,
and surprisingly, they've actually included Burakawani form in the vinyls.
Yeah, how about that?
So maybe it will see other merchandise venues.
No, it won't.
Wait, which one's Burakawani?
The movie.
The orange one.
The turtle form.
With the snake charmer head. The cobra turban.
The one that hasn't shown up yet.
Because it's in the movie. I think we've broken Fort Max and Mickey. I'm sorry, Fort Max. So anything else out of the Tokyo Toy Show?
Yeah, nothing important. At least not for us.
Oh. Well, and not really for anybody else either.
Yeah.
From what I can see, the Tokyo Toy Show is pretty dull. And not just this year, it's always dull.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So, hey, bunch of stuff on Netflix.
Which is good.
Yes.
Completely out of left field.
For those of you who have Netflix.
Well, look at it this way, Paladin. For those of us who don't have Netflix, which I'm also part of that group, this opens the possibility for, like, you know, better encodes of, like, the second season of VR Troopers, for instance.
But why would anyone want that?
That's the good season.
Well,
it's
relatively
still
speaking.
VR Troopers. Good is a relative term there.
Besides good or bad, it's the season that there's no decent copies of in existence. Since, you know, it never got, like, home video release or anything.
But for $8 for just the streaming program alone and the first month free, you get a lot done with just under $10.
Yeah, I mean, that does sound pretty good.
I wish they were all in HD, but the quality that they're giving you is good, though, so.
Well, why would any of them be in HD?
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Because the masters are on our standard definition
VHS
videotape.
Yes, but they can still be sent out in HD.
Well, they can be upscaled, but that doesn't make the picture any better.
Right, and you're going to be upscaling it anyway on your TV or computer if it's HD, so.
Unless you're streaming over the Wii, in which case it's not.
Well, in which case your TV will still be upscaling it
if
it's
your TV
an HD TV.
Yeah.
So I've watched the first three episodes of Dino Ranger, or Dino Thunder, sorry, for the first time.
Close enough.
Dino Ranger would probably be a lot more explosive.
Yeah.
No, Dino Ranger is a Chinese knockoff of Abba Ranger.
That works, too.
It's pretty good. I like it.
It had bad CGI monsters chasing Tommy in a jeep.
But Tommy Roundhouse kicked a Tyrannosaur in the face.
Yeah.
Because he's Tommy.
He can do things like that. Well, you know, Tommy is the Chuck Norris of Power Rangers.
Besides, a lot of shows start off with bad CG and then get better.
Or sometimes they start off with bad CG and continue having bad CG.
But have better story.
Not necessarily. That could get worse, too. Have you forgotten Transformers Energon already?
I certainly tried to.
Transformers Prime.
Well, except Transformers Prime has good animation and this writing's pretty good.
Eh.
Well, that's okay, you're
in. And Energon started off with good stories.
No, it didn't.
And got worse.
The crowning point of Energon was when Megatron kicked Scorponok's ass all over that place. And then
it was, what, like 6 episodes in?
Yeah, and then there's nothing worthwhile after that.
Exactly.
Yeah, pretty well, there's nothing worthwhile after Demolisher dies.
Isn't that also around the 6th episode?
Yes, but I think that happens a bit after Scorponok gets kicked all over the place.
You ran out of character development in 6 episodes, but didn't die for another 5.
Well, it's okay.
Kind of like everyone else in the series, except they lasted longer.
It's okay, because Energon ran out of story after 39 episodes, but didn't die
that long?
For another...
No, they it ran out of story halfway. It ran out of episode out of story after 20 episodes. Then it eats the same story again for the next 20.
But Energon was like 52 episodes long for it, Max.
Yeah.
So what happened to the other 12 episodes?
You're listening to Superhero Time, going completely off subject.
Tim Curry.
That's when they apparently decided that they were still out of story, but not to do a third repeat of the first part of the series again.
Really, the joke's on you because you know all this.
Yes, but the joke is on someone else because Fort Max isn't the one who wrote about it on the wiki.
No. I think that was mostly Spengler.
Well, whatever.
My reaction is the same as the Energon cast. Dull surprise.
I thought that was the Dreamwave cast.
There's a difference?
A little bit, yeah. I imagine the people who worked on Energon actually got paid.
And also, Energon had consistent proportions.
And moonwalking.
Moonwalking makes everything better.
Well, it wasn't real moonwalking. It was more like ice skating. And not like good ice skating, like figure skating or professional hockey. Just kind of, you know, slipping around. We were talking about something else, though, weren't we?
Let's talk about Battle Fever.
Now, there's still a couple of news items.
Well, yeah, but there are a few issues with the stuff that's on Netflix.
Right, that's what we were talking about.
Yeah, there are a few episodes that are not uploaded fully or at all. Like, Alien Rangers of Aquitar Part 1, instead will try to watch it. Instead, you'll get the Season 1 version of Day at the Dumpster.
Is there anything of value not up? Or is it just garbage that's not done right?
Well, the version of... Well, it's the cut versions of Time Force that are up.
That's unfortunate, but kind of expected.
And it's the same... And it's the internet... And the international versions of Mighty Morphin is used as well, so you're missing... So some of the... last-minute ADR work on some episodes is not present.
Have you looked at any of the Lost Galaxy episodes, Fort Max?
Not yet.
I just wondered if there is a difference between the American and international broadcasts of that, since it was also, you know, into edits and ADR until almost broadcast time.
It's probably all the same.
Okay.
But yeah, they're at least using the... They're definitely using the international masters, but I'm hoping a DVD release would use the actual Saban Entertainment masters. Especially,
or it'll just use whatever's conveniently at hand.
Yeah, and also one thing is on the Saban International masters seem to be PAL conversions.
Meaning?
Well,
PAL is a little bit less quality than what we have here.
Well... It's a little less quality if it's converted from NTSC format to PAL because of difference in the frame rate, which is most evident in the end credits for Season 1. Is okay. The scrolling of the end credits looks, well, jerky, whereas with the episodes... The one episode that used a Saban Entertainment Master with the 145 days of Power Rangers didn't have the... jerkiness on the end credit text scrolling.
I had the jerky on your mom.
For a nickel.
Your mom ate jerky.
For it's another nickel.
Okay, so what else?
And the first 90 seconds of the Ninja Turtles episode is missing.
No, Fort Max. Mickey asked about things worthwhile. You know, quality.
What does that have to do with Fort Max?
Well, oh, and the and also, of course, no Zordon's summoning of Titanus is not present in Doomsday Part 1.
Right.
Okay, let me ask a more specific question. Is there any of RPM or SPD missing?
Fort Max doesn't know.
I haven't gone through those yet.
Okay, but no reports yet.
No reports yet, and RPM at least has, for at least some of the episodes, has the... DVD has the end credits after the episode rather than over the end of the episode.
Well, that's pleasant.
Which apparently some of the episodes on the two DVD sets that were released were like that as well.
Okay, so moving on.
Where the f*** yes. is Mystic Knights of Tir-Nanog?
That's also a valid question. Not
they put up every other show that Saban owns, but not that one.
Well, they didn't put up Masked Rider.
Oh, that can f*** right off.
And there's a lot of stuff that Saban owned that didn't get put up with this.
Yeah, where's Robots in Disguise?
I guess or Samurai Pizza Cats.
I guess they didn't get that back from Disney either.
Right, but yeah. But yeah, we know that the deal, at least when they got Power Rangers, they at least also got VR Troopers and Beetleborgs.
Which is exactly what they have up.
Yeah. And considering, and don't know if there's anything else, considering we didn't know that there was, they got anything besides Power Rangers with this until it wound up on Netflix.
Right. Which kind of happened out of nowhere by itself.
Right. And we know that it's not Disney that did it, because all the episodes that are up on Netflix have the new Saban, have replaced the Saban, the old Saban Entertainment, Saban International logos at the end with the current Saban Brands logo. So
since we have everything streaming on Netflix now, do we even care about getting the reruns of Nickelodeon at this point?
Well, for people that have Netflix, I don't see why it would matter anymore. And, you know, for people who don't have Netflix, we can hope for people to encode the episodes from Netflix.
However, and of course, they are missing the aforementioned missing parts sign and the no, and the episode preview parts and other stuff, and the fact that it does seem to go down at times.
Well, your mom goes down at times.
And actually, originally, watch a lot of the episodes on anything but the computer, because apparently Netflix barfs when it's having to handle more anything over 500 episodes of a series.
They fixed that, though.
Because they originally had all 732 episodes uploaded, well, listed under one series entry.
Yeah, that was kind of dumb of them. How many episodes are there total now? I don't even know.
Not counting Sam. Well, prior to Samurai, there are 732.
Is that including remastered?
That is including the
remastered
two versions.
Yes.
And Saban, both Saban and Nickelodeon count those as season 18.
That's fair enough. Bullshit.
Well, whatever.
But yeah, now they have them. But yeah, few days after they were up, they rearranged them, so they're all split up by series.
Okay, I'm getting a headache listening to Fort Max talk about this. So, Paladin, give us the last bit of news, and then we'll go on.
Well, I was looking up something more important while he was talking.
Yay.
And it was announced today that we will be seeing net movies for Kamen Rider O's.
Well, that's not really surprising, right?
It follows the tradition, but it's still nice to confirm.
Well, sure. But what I want to know is where the rest of the Let's Go Kamen Rider net movies are.
They're in the fog with Mystic Knights.
They're waiting for the DVD release, I guess.
Well, since this is Kamen Rider, wouldn't they be in the Blue Forest?
Wrong Rider. Besides, Shroud's not around anymore to deliver them on a dirt bike. What was that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, never mind, I don't want to know. So are these Fosé images we've seen today credible, or...
They're incredible.
They're potentially credible, I think.
No, one of them was a photoshopped double image, so...
But it seems to be based on this art.
Yeah.
If the rumors are true, we'll be seeing actual Foes images sometime this week.
And the
for better or worse.
The official English on this logo seems to be spelling it Forze, which makes a little more sense than Fosé if it's supposed to be for 40. So I'm not sure where the Z part comes from, but you know.
Maybe he's French.
I hope not.
Yeah, he'll lose all the time.
Or
he could be like Battle France.
Oui!
So instead, he'll just wear perfume.
You're listening to Superhero Time.
Hey, this is JD from Fanboy Versus. Join me, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely live every Sunday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, or download the podcast. We'll discuss the week's biggest comic news, as well as review the current week's best issues. So tune in to Fanboy Versus, right here on the TF Radio Network.
Go, go, Podcast Rangers! You mighty morphing Podcast Rangers!
jeez, when are these guys ever going to move out of their parents' basements?
Well, I guess with that, we might as well move on to our first acid trip of the week, which is 1980s Battle Fever J.
Wow. I've been looking forward to watching Battle Fever J for a very long time, and it does not disappoint.
So, Battle Fever was originally the first
series.
And
actually, it wasn't 80s, it was 79.
I thought Spider-Man was 79.
Battle Fever J ran from February 79 to January 1980.
Okay, so our first acid trip of the week is 1979's Battle Fever J. Happy now?
Yes.
Bastard. So, this was the first series to take the Super Sentai title, right? Chronologically speaking.
I don't know if it was specifically called when they actually started using the title Super Sentai, but when they did start using it, Go Ranger and Jack were not included.
So the short version is yes.
Yeah.
And it followed along with the same formula of two-scale battles that Spider-Man introduced the year before.
Except this time they didn't get the suit stolen, so...
Okay, so it basically keeps up the formula.
Yeah.
And they had help developing this from Marvel Comics.
And this was originally supposed to be Captain Japan, too. Which would have been a hilarious way to adapt Captain America.
Well, they've certainly done worse adaptations of Captain America.
Yeah, I suppose they have, haven't they? So, a woman is walking the streets, much like your mom in her thinner days. But she's no ordinary what?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, she's no ordinary streetwalker, because she starts stabbing dudes with her umbrella, causing almost immediate death.
Yeah, she starts off the show by murdering the shit out of everyone she sees. Oh, hello, stab. Nice to meet you, stab.
Elsewhere, some deadbeat is trying to rent a car without paying, which I'm pretty sure is called stealing. When the owner's daughter, I think, comes up and hands him his bill, but there's actually a secret message. How Inspector Gadget of them.
So it's not very much of a secret message if it's written right on there.
Announcing that he'll have to pay next time, the dude takes off with the car anyway, which, again, I'm pretty sure is stealing.
It's okay that it's a green car, though, so no way would want it anyway.
And the little kid who was drawing on that one car said it was cool, so that must be okay, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's his seal of approval for these shows.
Well, so, for any Japanese media, anywhere.
So suddenly, and for no reason, we're out in the middle of nowhere with a man on a horse.
Yeah, because that happened all the time.
An actual horse.
Dude with his stolen rental car cuts him off, and they trade thumbs up as if it has some special meaning.
Meanwhile, in the hair salon...
Yeah, next we're in the salon, and this woman is praising her stylist on his skill at cutting hair, which she assumes...
Now, wait a sec here. That's not a woman. That is totally a dude.
Well, you'd know better than I would, Mickey. But she assumes... Look
at him!
She assumes that his style with hairstyling must mean he's from Paris. And indeed, he studied there for 5 years. Because only people who have been to Paris to study can cut hair well.
Yes, that makes perfect sense.
The car thief peeks around the corner behind him and whistles to get his attention. And distracted, he takes a chunk out of the woman or not's hair. It's very un-French of him, really. What, Mickey? Really?
Yeah.
So, next at
the pet store.
Yeah, some nut job is talking to a caged monkey and asks such things as if he's from Kenya also. The shop owner asks him if he can really talk to monkeys, and the obvious wacko says he can talk to all animals. He resumes his conversation with the monkey, who appears to have nothing good to say about the shop owner and requests that the police be called.
Okay, what kind of monkey is this? I've never seen this kind before.
I don't know. All monkeys look alike.
I'm assuming it's something that's illegal to own nowadays.
Probably.
Well, but again, this is Japan, so who knows?
That's
true. Can he really talk to animals, or is he just being a dick to the shopkeeper?
Well, either way, the shop owner is not very amused and but chases
actually,
the monkey.
I don't know which would be better, actually.
He's just crazy.
He chases the monkey whisperer out of the store, and as he flees, he runs into the street and hits the stolen rental car. That's a happy coincidence, I guess.
So now they're all together, they all decide to go run into the sewers.
Yeah, the four men all walk behind some bushes and head down the sewer, making their way through a somewhat improbable sequence of locations to reach a secret underwater headquarters. Because, what is this, Get Smart? Of course, Get Smart had a phone booth.
What's perplexing is they slide down a fire pole, and then they appear to be sucked up another hole later on just by a vacuum power, I guess.
That reminds me
of
your mom.
Do that.
And if you notice, if you look closely, when they pop out of that hole, they're all wearing different stuff than what they're actually wearing. They're all wearing some kind of dark jumpsuit.
So, stock footage saves the day.
Tim Curry. So, as it turns out, these guys are all agents of Battle Fever. What Battle Fever is doesn't get explained. But obviously it's not very important anyway, right?
Of course not.
Their commander explains the assassinations carried out by the woman with the umbrella, and the Battle Fever guys are sent out to catch her.
Just want to run away from the guy with the fake mustache.
It gets worse.
Yeah,
later.
That mustache is terrible.
Well, you know, Japanese people can't grow their own facial hair. So they quickly find
Plus, it was the 70s, so I mean...
Yeah, everyone had terrible mustaches.
So they quickly find and trail the woman matching the description of their target, and as night falls, they ambush her as she's walking through the middle of an empty baseball field. What the hell? Seriously, what the hell?
Well, and then she runs like crack across the baseball field in those high heels.
Yeah, because that's totally believable.
So, yeah, there's some total FM heels she's got on there.
After a short struggle, they apprehend her and take her back to their secret base. But
after shooting darts at her.
Their success lasts only seconds as they find out they grabbed the wrong woman at gunpoint.
Yeah, well, we'll let you go. Please don't sue.
The woman, they're all the same.
So, some old white guy walks in the room, and the Battle Fever commander introduces him as FBI agent Bostner, and he explains in mechanically translated Japanese, which is not nearly as awesome as it sounds.
Well, actually, Ayn, it sounds like they had a guy who spoke actual English there.
Yeah, and then they dubbed him over with Japanese.
You can hear the start of, you can hear the actual English before the before the special high-tech dubbing gadget kicks in.
Right. So he explains in the mechanically translated Japanese that the woman they kidnapped is also an FBI agent, Diane Martin. And the two of them have come from America in search of Egos, a secret cult who is said to surpass known science. Just to emphasize this point, we cut to the Egos base where a bunch of guys in cheap costumes kneel before a strobe light that explains how they have to remove the poison from the world in order to do away with the Earth's dark state and allow Egos to take over.
Of course.
Of course.
Back at Battle Fever, it's explained that Egos is behind most world conflicts, and we see a montage of old grainy stock footage.
Is it set to a moving 80s song?
Sadly, what? No.
Oh.
Well, someone can fix that, probably.
If anyone cared to. So, to try to catch the woman with the umbrella, who is revealed to be an Egos assassin, they had planned to have Diane impersonate her. Apparently in 1979, this makes sense when you're on drugs.
Which I suspect all of Japan was.
Or at least the people responsible for this.
Well, given that the same year that Sentai stopped being this batshit insane is the same year that Shider was on.
The drugs just went somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, or at least they changed what team was on drugs.
So since Battle Fever kind of the FBI over in this whole mess, it's been decided that Diane will join Battle Fever while Agent Bostner goes back home because Japan hates foreigners.
Well, at least she can make them coffee.
Except Diane is a foreigner.
But she doesn't look it.
Oh, okay.
Well, and she can speak Japanese.
Right. Later, Battle Fever's commander lines the five of them up and draws a sword. The four men quickly jump over the sword, but Diane is hesitant. The general explains that to fight Egos, she can't be afraid to die. After sitting there in fear for a bit longer because she's a girl and should only be a secretary, she finally jumps the sword, leaping higher over the blade than the guys did. Meanwhile, as Bossner goes to enter the airport, the Umbrella Lady appears and kills him. Diane is distraught to learn of this since Bossner was her father.
Oh, yes. I can see the resemblance.
At that point, I was kind of hoping that if her mother was ever in the series, she would also be a blonde American woman. So she runs crying from the base because, of course, she is just a girl.
And it's Japan.
Yeah. So after the guys go and bring her back, the general leads them to a large room where a giant robot is being assembled. It'll be ready in a matter of days, but in the meantime, their personal battle suits are ready to go. They try them on and adopt their new secret Battle Fever identities.
They don't even get more for
and their Battle Fever dances.
Yeah, Battle Japan.
They just put them on like their plumbing jumpsuits.
Really well-tailored plumbing jumpsuits, too.
With horrible helmets.
I love the names, though. Like Battle Cossack.
I like how there's nothing Russian about him at all.
Yeah, except for his little dance.
But the costume has no Russian cues to it.
Yeah. So Battle Japan, Battle Cossack, Battle France, Battle Kenya, and Miss America are proclaimed to be the Dancers of Justice, and the general tells them to use their dance dance techniques to defeat Egos.
Because that makes perfect sense.
And this is the first we've ever heard of their dance techniques or anything special about that.
And they dance.
Yes, in the
if they
following,
want to.
In the following fight scene against the Umbrella Kaijin, they do just that, plumbing through the really cheaply costumed foot soldiers with vaguely dance-like moves, except for Battle Japan, who seems to be powered by karate instead. And, of course, instead of any direct battle with the Umbrella thing, they put their stick weapons together and use the Pentaforce to fire two missiles at it. Sadly, it did not shoot out a baby or cats or anything amusing like that.
Or,
well, there
or
can only be one big bomber.
And since it's the first episode, there's no giant battle, because that would be too fun. Back in the Egos base, a strobe light thing says that the loss of a single monster doesn't really matter anyway, as we see the next one already being grown in a giant disembodied uterus. And that's really all that matters. So what the hell just happened?
We have stared into the eyes of madness and seen greatness.
Yeah, that was definitely a thing.
It was a weird f***ing thing.
Yeah, I have to agree with that.
Wait, the show or Miss America's crotch?
I wasn't paying that close attention, Fort Max.
Well, you only need a nickel for that.
I heard Paladin say something about a nickel, but I missed Mickey's comment.
I found her crotch appealing.
I didn't mind that, but the hair molded right into the helmet was pretty weird.
It wasn't molded into the helmet. It was threaded in, like, doll hair.
I think we need to return to helmets having hair.
On the men and women.
Yes. So I think my favorite of them is Battle Kenya.
Why?
Because the thought of Japanese people being from Kenya is just... It doesn't stop being amusing to me.
And
he's dressed like the world's worst Black Panther ripoff.
And, of course, there's the part in the opening where he's running around dressed as a caveman.
Yes.
And during his dance sequences.
Which isn't offensive at all.
No. No. It completely isn't.
But he looks like if you were to go to a Family Dollar and look at those cheap Power Ranger knockoff toys, there'd be he's the Black Panther one of those. The stickers crookedly applied to the chest.
Yeah, you're on to something with that. Or, you know, if you go to some low-budget comic book convention in some small town, that would be somebody's Black Panther costume.
Yes.
It's probably about the production budget they had for the show, too.
Well, all their money went to drugs.
Gotta support
and
that habit.
And it shows.
So the question is, what drugs were they on?
All of
Where
them.
Can we get some?
See, I'm putting on some kind of experimental super drug that Japanese scientists invented.
And it also explains why Metal Heroes ended.
They ran, out?
Yes.
They went to go to the stash one day and found it empty and were just all like, Oh, bummer. Or however you say that in Japanese.
They give it all to a child named Akira.
1979 must have been such an interesting time to make TV shows. But still, the important thing is you have to wonder what the people watching it in 1979 thought about it.
Well, obviously it was successful because they kept going for another 33 years.
But was it successful because it appeared to be good, or successful because it was entertainingly nuts?
Yes.
I don't think that concept really existed back then.
Being
of liking
psychotic.
Something that was bad.
Maybe not.
Or it went on because it sold toys.
Were there toys for Battle Fever?
Yes.
It's a Sentai, so I would assume
there were,
so.
There were toys for Go Ranger.
I had no idea. Are they any good?
Well, why do you think they had all those vehicles?
Was there a toy of the Big Bomber?
I don't know if they had roleplay toys for those.
Oh.
But I know they had vehicle. They had toys of the various vehicles, like including the hot air balloon.
Damn, the Battle Fever J robot got a Soul of Chogokin release.
Well, that's no surprise. It looks just like a Mazinger, except with a big BF on its chest.
But yeah, I mean, they're.
That was the part
of the main mecha and the ship that carried it in a casket.
What?
Essentially their carrier Zord just dropped it, carried the Battle Fever Robo in a casket.
Well, now I kind of regret not watching a further episode of this. When did the robot premiere?
Not in episode 2.
Well, then I feel less bad. But no, I forgot about the best part of the fight scene, where they all jump up in the air and make the BF symbol with
yes.
their bodies.
And apparently, and make each letter with all five of them and have them have the letters next to each other.
Yes.
I don't see how that works.
Well, the power of their dancing makes them be able to be in more than one place at once, obviously.
That or the drugs were giving them double vision.
It was all just a hallucination. Yeah, Battle Fever was, it was definitely something, but I don't think I'll be watching any more of it.
I might.
Question now is, how the hell is Gokaidra going to adapt Battle Fever?
Well, I'm kind of curious about that, too. Because there's no way to even take those helmets seriously.
Because they have tried.
Why would you try to take the helmet seriously?
Well, there's Gokaidra, they don't take anything seriously.
And they did try to use the Battle Fever keys once, but no results.
Because they hadn't unlocked the power yet.
So what kind of power would Battle Fever J unlock?
Dancing.
I thought that's what Car Ranger did.
No, Car Ranger unlocked the pose and the ability to teach children about traffic safety.
Yeah.
We covered this like 2 weeks ago. Or was it last week?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it all kind of runs together anyway. One episode is just as good as the next. Maybe good
just like
is the
Sentai.
Right word, but...
Good is a relative term.
I think Sentai is better than us.
Well, it depends on the Sentai.
Well, yeah, we're obviously better than Ghostager. But then it's kind of debatable whether Overdrive is also better than Ghostager.
I'm going to say yes.
Ghostager is better than Overdrive. I maintain that.
But not by much.
Only because it had better merchandise.
Ah.
But if you're just reviewing just the shows themselves...
Then they're both the same crap.
Mm.
Who's doing that?
Ben.
Oh.
He's fighting Darth Vader.
Well, the thing is...
That's mashing. A metaphor.
The Overdrive actors aren't as painful to look at as the Ghostager actors.
I don't know, they're kind of bad.
They're both equally competent, though.
Well, none of them have that neck.
Or the ears.
No, the ears aren't disturbing.
Yes, they are. They're like two teacup saucer things glued to the side of someone's head.
No, they just look ridiculous. That neck is disturbing.
Well, at least the ears and the neck weren't on the same person.
Oh, God.
But, you know, if that was the case, the wind would catch them behind the ears and tip their neck forward, and then that would be the end of it. It'd be hard to keep a head balanced like that with a strong breeze.
That or someone would just grab them by the ears and rip their head off.
Now, of course, if the ears and neck were on Hyde, it'd be even worse because he's already so tall. Then he'd be like 7 feet tall with the ears and neck like that.
See how bad it is when you don't have episodes to discuss? We're reminiscing about Ghost Saber.
That's a little different.
We paid your mom a nickel to listen to Superhero Time. She died. It's time now for another Dynaman moment.
Your wheels are real cherry.
That's just like Dyna Pink. Oh, you bet.
How would you know?
Oh, kids.
How fast does she go?
Pretty fast from what I've heard.
We're not just talking about the motorcycle.
That's not very nice.
Hey, cut it out, you knuckleheads. Well, I'm gonna try this baby out.
Don't fall! Don't fall! Don't worry, Doc, I'm much too good looking.
From Beast Wars to Zeta Gundam, FigureReviews.com features a library of in-depth action figure reviews and high-quality photography reaching back to 2005.
XV and RAC carefully evaluate each figure and rate it on a non-numerical scale ranging from state-of-the-art to shoot-yourself, using a special formula based on years of toy reviewing experience.
Text, photos, video, audio, informative awesome in every format. FigureReviews.com.
Espere, espere, espere! Ai, 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 ai! Zoldo, o que que há no globo visualizador?
É o futuro que está vendo, Alpha. É o Ranger Preto.
Timmy D's, real brand mayonnaise.
Okay, so, let's go into Power Rangers the movie.
You're skipping over B-Fighter for now?
Yes.
Okay, then. Now, who saw this in theaters?
I did.
You weren't even alive back then.
I was the target audience back then.
No, you weren't. You were like 6 months old. Because that was, what, 1995? 95, right?
I was in second grade. You're confusing me with Barricade.
I was in high school.
I was in Chicago for a wedding. But not mine.
Alright, so how does the movie live up to your memories?
It's about the same.
I don't even think I saw Power Rangers, the movie, till like 98.
Pretty sure I saw this like 5 times when it was in the theaters. I'm also pretty sure I didn't pay for all 5 times.
Well, how old were you?
95. I was 10
so
at this time.
So how old are you now? 100 and... What?
What?
Yeah, he was 95 when he saw it in theaters. I got it.
Well, I got it too, but it wasn't very funny.
Alright, moving on.
But you know, it's a Fort Max joke, so.
Fort
okay.
Max, you.
So Power Rangers the movie starts with just another typical day that involves skydiving. Because Bulk and Skull would totally get cleared to jump out of an airplane. Proving this point, they nearly forget their parachutes.
They would have been fine. They would have just landed in a cake or something.
Now, of course, Tommy, having to be cooler than everyone else, also jumps out of the plane with a surfboard.
Yeah, because that totally happens all the time in Angel Grove.
Does anybody remember the commercials for Power Rangers, the movie that showed White Ranger jumping out of an airplane?
No.
Yes.
No. So this whole skydiving thing is some charity stunt or something to save something or other.
Well,
totally
that's
not important. Since skydiving
well,
is
so that's a well, it that's how you know it's Power Rangers.
Still, it doesn't really matter why they're skydiving because skydiving is totally awesome, dude.
It's very 90s.
Yeah. So while Tommy and the others naturally all hit their target perfectly, Bulk and Skull go a little off course and end up landing in a construction site.
It could have been worse. They could have landed in a zoo somewhere.
And then they land in the construction site quite a while after the others landed.
Yes.
That's because they jumped quite a while after the others.
But anyway, what's important is that later the workers at that construction site dig up a giant glowing egg.
Well, no, they dig up a giant hand that has a giant egg in it.
Was Lady Gaga in the egg?
Weird Al.
Either way, though, this can't be any kind of bad sign, right? There's always giant hands holding glowing eggs buried in the ground, right?
Eggs right. are tasty, so it's a good thing.
Yeah. And even more, it's a egg that was in a hand that was buried under a sewer access cover.
Yeah. That totally happens all the time. I think there's a number that you can call to actually check and make sure if your dig site is not going to disturb some ancient evil artifact.
Yeah, but then you got to fill out a bunch of paperwork. It's just a big hassle.
Yeah, I'm
sure. Go through, like, the Desert of Despair or something to find Ninjor and...
Different continuity, Fort Max.
Yeah.
So Rita and Zed pop down to check it out, followed, of course, by Goldar and... What the f*** is that thing?
According what is the story on important. Pudgy Pig there?
According to some early script, he's some relative of Goldar's. Distant relative.
Of course, it didn't actually make it into the movie.
Well, yeah, like half of the, like a lot of the original script. And
yeah, like Ernie.
Most of the movie itself.
Okay, what is the story behind the scenes of him? Why is that creature there instead of Squatter, Babu, or Finster?
Or Rito, for that matter.
Rito didn't exist yet, did he?
Well,
no, not until the next year.
I mean, they obviously had the Kaku Ranger designs available to them, or they wouldn't have had the Ninja Zords later.
And they only use those designs to an extremely loose degree.
Yeah.
Still,
your
I mean...
Your mom has a loose degree.
Okay, so anyway. So they crack the egg, which is full of purple slime, which quickly takes the form of Ivan Ooze. Zed wants Ivan to destroy Zordon for him, and Ivan's down with that. Zordon, meanwhile, has detected the egg being dug up and sends the Rangers to investigate. Ivan senses the impending arrival of the teenagers, mostly by smell, and leaves some ooze men to greet them, leading into a gooey fight scene. Also a scene showing off lots of cool gear that we never see again.
And also not even using some of the gear that you barely see.
And of course, this is one of the points where extensive reshoots had to happen.
What wasn't?
Because originally this...
No. What wasn't a point where extensive reshoots had to happen?
Well, yeah, I suppose so.
Okay, why did reshoots have to happen here?
Well, originally they didn't have full... Well, the helmets didn't cover
they had
all
no visors
their entire
or masks.
Faces. No
okay,
visors.
So they filmed that scene with the visorless helmets then.
And
yes.
The actual Ranger actors in the suits.
Oof.
Yeah.
Who the hell thought that was a good idea?
Yeah, when they got the dailies back for that at some point, they discovered how terrible that looked, and they had to
and
go
actually,
and
this
that.
Was more the Fox executives who were saying that, no, we need to be able to see the actors.
Which, I mean, on one level kind of makes sense. Or
yes,
if, you
if
had...
it's not Power Rangers, that would be a perfectly logical position.
Right, that was
going to
be my point. If you're paying for big-name actors to be doing this, yes, you want to have their faces on screen to justify your investment. But this is Power Rangers, and you're paying these people in sandwiches.
And plus, it's Power Rangers. It's not the actors they're watching for. It's
the spandex.
It's the helmets.
It's the spandex.
It's not
except
spandex.
In this movie, it's literally not spandex.
No, it's not spandex, it's basically tissue paper, or at least falls apart almost as much. Especially the stunt actor who was in the White Ranger suit had a tendency to not be careful moving around.
And
so,
then wound up
blowing
with
his crotch out.
With yeah. giant hair in the crotch.
Yes.
I've got that problem with my pants, too.
I imagine your mom does, too.
Vicky, I thought you had that problem in the seat of your pants, not the front. So, while the Oozman fight is happening, Ivan seeps his way into the command center and laments to Zordon of all the time he was trapped in that egg and the marvels of human achievement he missed, like the Brady Bunch reunion.
And that part ad-libbed.
Well, you had to know that the writers couldn't be that clever.
Of course not.
Ivan easily wrecks the place, destroying the power and all the associated toys.
All with some magic flute.
Fortunately, isn't that just a regular flute he was using as a prop?
If you can shoot lightning out of it, it's a magic flute.
I doubt he was using a regular flute as a prop, because those things are expensive.
Well, it was a wooden flute, so I mean, it wasn't that special. But fortunately, he takes just long enough to destroy the command center so that the Rangers had time to finish up their work at the construction site. So then when their powers finally do fail, they return to the command center and find it in ruins.
Power fail.
And Zordon is now physically present and aging rapidly. If nothing's done, he'll die really soon.
Oh, noes.
Whatever will we do?
Alpha explains there might be a new power on the distant planet of Phaedos. Alpha thinks there may be just enough power left to send them there, but then nothing will be left to get them back. But that's okay, because they'll most likely die trying to find the power anyway. So, with no supplies or even the change of clothes, the unpowered Rangers are slung across the galaxy.
Speaking of changes of clothes, does anyone have noticed that they're all wearing an awful lot of white?
Probably not specifically, but now that you mention it, yeah.
Any reason for that?
Beats me.
Yeah. Also, I don't think Kimberly's wearing any pants.
I see no problem with that.
Except that it's Kimberly. Not my first choice. So Ivan decides to make up for some lost time. Finding Rita and Zed's surplus to his needs, he lets himself into the palace and stuffs them into a snow globe. He offers Goldar and Mordant the option of serving him or taking up residence in their own cheap souvenir, and then sets off to conquer the unguarded Earth, but not before sending a batch of Tengu warriors after the Rangers.
Why the name change? Why did from Tengu to Tenga?
Who cares?
Whose fault is it?
Let's take a moment to discuss Goldar's new costume.
Must we?
Well,
I think it's better, actually.
I think it's kind of lousy.
The metal parts are better. Any part that involves something organic, such as his feathers or his face, looks a billion times worse.
Metal.
Now, here's the question. Does it look better or worse than his Season 3 face?
Worse.
Yeah, worse. I'll tell you what costume looks really cool, though, is the Zed costume.
Yes. I wish they'd kept that and brought it into the series.
Yeah, but they probably burned it after they finished shooting those scenes.
It probably tore apart.
And actually, I'm not sure how much of the stuff that was made for that movie Saban actually owned.
Well, apparently they own the Tenga suits.
No, they're not the same suits.
Well, the helmets are a little bit different, but I think the bodies are the same.
Were they from Kaku Ranger, or are they a Saban creation? Okay.
I don't remember what the foot soldiers in Kaku Ranger were, but they weren't them.
Bluish. They look like blue
things.
Putties drawn by someone who was drunk.
Speaking of drug use... Is anybody subbing Kaku Ranger? We should watch an episode of that.
Episode 1 has been subbed by the same group that's done the first 7 episodes of Go-Go 5.
V.
So it's the group that has basically ceased to exist.
No, it's the group that had been busy with other stuff, and actually they released episode 7 last week of Go-Go 5. So
after how many months wait?
1.
That's entirely too long.
It's faster than TV Nihon's doing Shuranger.
It's also faster than TV Nihon's doing Mega Ranger.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah. Their last episode of that they released was over a year ago.
And that was, what, 21?
20.
Oh, even worse. So anyway, back in Angel Grove, Ivan's plan is to distribute a purple goo to the kids of the city, which, when touched by the adults, removes their will and makes them useful slaves. Ivan's new labor force is put to work in digging up a couple more relics of Ivan's former glory, also buried under Angel Grove.
Which they will try to sell to kids as well.
The Rangers land on a rocky Australian or Fadosian beach and quickly discover the skeletal remains of Beta Ray Bill, who must have been seeking the power before them.
It's Beta Ray Bill wearing a weird cell phone headset and what appears to be some bondage gear.
In space,
what the hell
Australia.
Goes on this planet?
They don't really have much time to worry about that, because the Tengu arrive shortly after them and get to attacking. The Tengu are pretty strong, and without their powers, the former Rangers aren't much of a match. Conveniently, a cloaked figure appears, who quickly disrobes and reveals herself as a really impractically attired warrior, who begins beating upon the Tengu before repelling them with whirly whistle sticks.
And jiggle physics.
And this is another thing where they had to do extensive reshoots.
Because they completely had to recast Dulcia.
Well, first, their first actor got sick. So then they recasted. But then that actor didn't work out. And then then their first choice got better. So they went back and did it with her again.
Meanwhile, in California, the Power Rangers were trapped in a theater while Rita and Zed were trying to get married.
Well, trapped in a theater and also stock footage.
Same difference.
Yeah.
Well, for instance, you had
okay.
You had that and also trapped and also Green Ranger being in the command center again, which kept switching back between being destroyed and not destroyed, and
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Evil Alpha.
That did give us the best bit of the best thing Alpha ever did, though.
Which was giving Zordon some hair.
And those and hippie glasses.
So she starts smacking the Rangers around a bit and calling them dumb before finding out they used to be Zordon's Power Rangers, after which point she takes them home and awakens the power of their spirit animals or something, and then puts them to bed so they can go questing through the dangerous jungle to the Ninjetti Temple the next morning.
Well, except half of that doesn't even happen because, well, it got filmed but wasn't included and got cut.
No big loss.
Yeah. And there was something with a frog, I don't know.
No, that was included.
Anyway, Dulcia...
just as much sense.
Dulcia can't go with them because, for reasons not explained, and I'm sure not important at all, she can't go out that direction past the ruins without getting old just like Zordon is. Yay,
sure,
plot convenience.
She has a fatal case of plot convenience.
Yes. So, back on Earth, Ivan's plan is in full effect, and while the adults are all working to dig up Ivan's battle machines, the kids are left unattended to run wild and party all the time. Everybody's cool with that, except the one kid who is the random friend of the Rangers the movie follows around, who just knows something is wrong. But that's not really important. At all.
I hate that subplot.
Well, obviously.
And also Bulk and Skull are there.
Yeah, but they don't really do anything yet. So as the ninja-suited Rangers trek through the jungle, they're attacked by the skeleton of some really big animal that moves like a really bad puppet.
Yeah, I wonder why.
After overcoming this, the Rangers eventually find their way to the Ninjetti Temple, but before they can claim the great power, they have to defeat the gatekeepers, which are apparently made of stone that walks out of the wall. But
if you
want to
defeat the gatekeepers, you just have to be the keymaster.
Yes. But through the power of really painful fight banter, they manage to defeat the rock guardian monster things. And the temple opens, bestowing power upon the Rangers.
Okay, pause.
Yes.
First of all, what do ninja powers have to do with anything going on this planet? They're in a jungle, and they get assigned animals like bears and frogs. What does that have to do with ninjas at all?
Yes.
They kind of look like ninjas with the new costumes, but even that's a stretch.
Gay ninjas, maybe. Okay, so then they get their ranger costumes back.
Yeah.
Was anybody else super pissed they were still in the same old costumes again?
Not as pissed as when they got the same old costumes again a second time.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they paid a lot for those costumes in the movie. They're sure going to use them for more than 5 minutes. What?
Why not get some more use out of them?
Right. I mean,
well,
the
less we have to look at Kimberly's helmet's man jaw, the better.
Yes, that was unfortunate. On the other hand, those costume designs weren't the greatest anyway.
I like aspects of them, but they're still executed kind of shoddily.
Yes. And much still, like the rest of the movie.
And they don't even get new helmet designs that aren't all dinosaur themed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
but they did change the chest emblems, right?
Yes, they did do that.
Yeah.
What?
The chest emblem. So that's at least something, even though you can't really see the chest emblems clearly.
It's more of a consideration than they gave the show costumes.
Well, yeah. Maybe they should have put chest emblems on the show costumes.
What?
But yeah, actually, that's a good point, though. They could have restyled the helmets to not look like the old helmets as much, while still keeping the colors. But
we're probably
still
too afraid to draw away from the iconic costumes.
I suppose, but either way, it would have required effort.
But even as kids, I mean, y'all were younger than I was, but surely you thought they should have changed costumes then, right?
Well, I saw the movie after I saw season 3, so the idea of the costumes staying the same was already in my head. So I probably don't count. Anybody else?
Yeah, that's good enough.
So anyway, on Earth, Ivan's Zordy things are all dug up and powered with a full tank of ooze, ready to go rampaging through the city. With no further need of his slave labor, Ivan commands them all to go jump off a cliff. And so
they
begins
willingly
the,
obey.
And so begins the slowest march ever.
The Let's just say that Ivan ooze is awesome. Thanks for your help. Y'all go die now.
So that kid from before overhears and decides he has to go get the runaway youth of Angel Grove to help save their parents. Good luck with that, kid. The rangers beam down the middle of the city just in time to see lots of stuff blowing up. Wasting no time, they call in their new Zords, and the battle begins using the best CGI 1995 could offer.
Which still isn't saying much.
Yeah, I'm sure that was pretty sad at the time. So the kid manages somehow to get the other children to care about what happens to the adults, even Bulk and Skull. And they all board the monorail, which just so happened to have part of its track broken by one of Ivan's ectomorphicons. Uh-oh, peril. Tommy diverts the Falcon Zord to act as a fill-in track section, leaving the other rangers to fight off Hornetor and Scorpitron by themselves. Somehow or another, involving the use of tentacles, the rangers manage to destroy Scorpitron, but can only damage Hornetor a bit before Ivan decides to get in the game himself and fuses with the shiny bug thing.
Because ooze makes everything better.
And bigger.
It really does.
See, also the Ninja Turtles.
Well, that was a different color of ooze, usually.
And it had a very disappointing secret.
And actually, the ooze in Ninja Turtles was pretty inconsistently colored, wasn't it?
I always remember it being green.
It was purple in the TV show.
Was it?
Or which sometimes it was show?
Or sometimes it was just generically glowy. So the kids find the adults and try to physically push them back, but it's no use because they're just weak little children. Bulk Skull
and they're
getting
pushed over the edge too. Ha ha ha!
Bulk Skull and whatever the focus kid's name is that I don't care about to learn anyway, use a fire hose to try to stop them approaching the aforementioned cliff. Meanwhile, the rangers form the Ninja Megazord and attack Ivan, quickly taking the battle to outer space now, flying higher than ever before. They're rangers in space, you might say.
Boo.
Ivan destroys the Ninja Megazord's sword, what? And is generally getting the upper hand in the fight. They decide
no, that's the Shogun Megazord sword. He just borrowed it for this.
You know, I always thought that what they should have done was use the Shogun Zords and Falcon Zord for the movie Zords.
Actually, they kind of did. There is this little adaptation book that for whatever reason, well, it used mostly images from the movie, but for whatever reason, the one image that it had of the Ninja Megazord was a picture of the Shogun Megazord from the show.
I guess they couldn't get CGI stills for some reason. But no, my point was going to be that if they had done that, then they could have sold the movie edition of the Megazord with the pink arm, and then later sold the normal package version with the white arm. Or, you know, at least had some reasonable justification for there being a pink arm at all. But anyway...
But this is Bandai.
So the Rangers decide the only thing to do is use the approaching Ryan's Comet and fly Ivan into its path as he's grappled onto the Megazord. Struggling to separate from him, Aisha activates the emergency control and causes the Megazord to knee Ivan in the nuts.
It is a universal solution for everything.
Yeah. It loosens his grip and frees the Megazord to fly clear just as the flaming comet collides with Ivan, destroying both.
Comets.
I know, that's my favorite part of the movie, the comet on fire. Because there's nothing not wrong about that situation. It's like someone thought, how can we do this the most incorrect way possible?
Well, they certainly found out how.
Best part of the movie right there. But then they had to spoil it by returning to the command center and the Rangers finding Zordon dead. That's not the part that ruined it. The part that ruined it is Tommy saying that the power can do anything, and the Rangers using it to restore the command center and revive Zordon. Because the movie would have been a lot better if it ended with Zordon dead and everything still gone to shit. Then there's some kind of party in the city because everyone didn't die or something, I don't know.
Of course, you can't have death exist in a children's program.
And back up
you,
on the moon.
Did you almost say children?
I approve.
Possibly, yes.
I approve. Back up on the moon, Goldar and Morton are thinking of taking over the business themselves, just as Rita and Zed walk back into the throne room, having been freed of their snow globe when Ivan got blown up by the flaming comet. End credits. So would you say that's better or worse than Turbo?
I was definitely better than Turbo because there's enjoyable parts to it.
Like the flaming comet?
It's just generally fun. I mean, it's very stupid and poorly done, but it's fun.
They were at least trying, right?
They were trying.
In some of it, yes.
Well, they were trying in as much as they could use the stuff they could afford to have.
They were trying about as much as they were for the regular TV show.
Okay. But, I mean, you know, all the original stuff they had basically ate up the budget, and then they had to go back and do a bunch of reshoots. So that kind of screwed things up more. Not that I'm saying the movie as it started out might have been better, but...
It would have been even worse considering what they were planning on using for the ooze monsters fights before.
Yeah, those rat suits.
Yeah.
You really have to wonder what someone was thinking when they did that. Well, okay, I guess I can imagine what they were thinking, which is that, hey, that's cheap. And, you know, it's not the same way that when they were reviewing the footage later, someone said, hey, that's cheap. No, I mean, I've read a script for the, well, an earlier draft of the movie, and yeah, there was a lot more to it, but also a lot of that stuff I don't think would have actually worked in the movie. Like the deleted fight on a suspension bridge with the Mama Tanga.
I kind of would want to see that, I admit.
Just for the your mom jokes?
Of course.
Yeah. Still, with how Power Rangers the movie did, it's a wonder they even tried to do Turbo theatrically.
Did they even try?
Well, it went to, like, you know, 5 theaters, so...
Well, Mighty Morphin actually did pretty well in theater returns.
Really?
Yeah.
I always understood that it did pretty badly.
Turbo did, but that was because it was limited release. But Turbo still made money with... Well, Turbo made a lot of money on home video release.
For everyone who's too stupid to see it in the theaters.
What? Did anyone here actually buy it on video or DVD?
I don't own a copy of it. Although, given that it's been like $5 at Walmart for longer than I can remember, there's really no reason not to own a copy.
Except for what it is.
Well, still, it's just $5.
I still own two movies.
What?
Well, there's a 2D, there's a, well, I've seen $5 sets at Walmart that, and it's $5 set for both movies.
Well, that's even better. I mean, it's not like either one will ever actually reach a dollar bin. So that's as close as you can get.
I don't know. I'm not sure I'd pay money for it.
Well, it's on Netflix, right?
I own Revenge of the Fallen, but I don't think I'd pay money for this.
Ouch.
But do you own a copy of The Phantom Menace?
I have some standards.
If you say so. I was going to say something else, but now I've forgotten.
Yeah, good enough.
Now, yeah. Of course, with Turbo, Turbo actually was originally going to be a five-parter for the TV show.
Yes, well, a lot of things were intended to happen with Turbo that didn't for one reason or another.
At one point, it might have been intended to be good.
No, it was still the first half of Turbo. Even if you don't think the second half of Turbo is good, it's still better than the first half.
Oh, yeah, the second half tossed your salad.
Classics. Okay, at this point, let's take a break. Paladin has a review of... well, you'll find out when you listen to it.
Superhero time!
Welcome yet again to Paladin's Place. Things are at a bit of a lull on superhero time, since Japan thinks golf is more interesting than our weekly tokusatsu fix, the bastards, so I can take a moment to correct a previous oversight in the reviewing schedule. Bear with me now as I count up my sins. At this point, any self-respecting Kamen Rider fan knows the story of Boss Narumi, founder of a detective agency in Futo City, friend to the half-boiled and the downtrodden, and the first person to encounter the mysterious menace of Gaia memories. But since fashion sense alone is not a match for these rubber-suited monstrosities, Narumi gets a mysterious device known as the Lost Drive, courtesy of some chick on a dirt bike, along with his own refined Gaia memory. And thus, Kamen Rider Skull was born.
Skull!
Yes.
Skull!
During my Rider Movie Month reviews, I had to leave out Skull in favor of some other Rider toys, but now I can finally examine this smooth criminal. So here's my review of SH Figuarts Kamen Rider Skull. Skull's physical appearance is the same as nearly every other Kamen Rider double mold from Figuarts, major differences in this case being the Lost Driver belt and molded ribcage, and of course the somewhat frightening new head mold used here. The blend of silver and black coloring really works well on this figure, and the naturally excellent amount of Figuarts articulation is utilized to its full potential once again. Aside from the normal assortment of hand poses, Kamen Rider Skull comes with three unique accessories. A scarf, which has been a design element of Kamen Riders for many years now, that comes in two variations, a normal relaxed pose or the more heroic action pose, powered by the winds of Futo. Next, a handheld weapon known as the Skull Magnum, which is the boss's personal sidearm for fights. And I must say, after several Rider reviews with only melee weapons for combat, it's refreshing to see something different here. Last, but certainly not least, the Boss Hat. A white fedora that has become the symbol of Kamen Rider Skull, and by extension his detective agency. This also comes in two forms. New Edition, which looks fresh off the Windscale clothing rack, and Battle Damaged Edition, which has a small chip taken out caused by his last fight. This could be the most unusual accessory ever included with a Figuart, but I can't find fault with it because anyone able to fight off dopants with a fedora is automatically and unspeakably awesome. But I must offer a warning about this boss head accessory. The plastic in the fedora does not blend well with the metallic paint used for Skull's cranium. Leaving on the hat for a significant amount of time can eventually cause the head paint to wear away. I advise any owners of this Figuart release to set aside the hat while on the shelf. After all, nobody wants a chipped Skull. Aside from the paint-wearing problem, there is one other major flaw with Skull. The availability. Figuart's Kamen Rider Skull was only sold through the Tamashii webshop operating solely in Japan. This means Skull's price is much higher than a typical Figuart release and much harder to purchase. And because of this unusual release venue and proportionately higher cost, I suspect most collectors will inevitably choose to pass on Skull. Which is a shame. This is an excellently designed figure and probably the most enjoyable repaint I've ever owned from any action figure series. you can find him for a somewhat reasonable price nowadays, I strongly recommend considering you add Kamen Rider Skull to your collection. Glad I finally got that part taken care of. Stay tuned for another half-boiled review on the next Superhero Time.
Hey everybody, it's your old friend John DeLuna, and do you like video games? Do you like people who like video games? Well, if so, you gotta listen to New Soundwave. It's the weekly video game podcast of record. News, rumors, in-depth discussion of new and retro gaming, plus the occasional contest or giveaway. So if you game, you gotta listen to New Soundwave. Check us out at tfradio.net, a proud member of the Transformers Internet Radio Network.
The third strike, y'all, is Street Fighter 3.
Superhero Time, where your mom jokes go to die.
Alright, last up in today's all-power playback is Juco B-Fighter. Because if you ever wanted to know what Beetleborgs was like without kids, among other things. If you ever wondered what Beetleborgs was like without being Beetleborgs, this is it.
It's about like what I expected.
So, B-Fighter finds all the world's bugs having a spaz. A team of researchers sets out into a forest to investigate for the cause, and one of them hears some strange sound and breaks away from the group to find the source. Very soon, he's following a floaty, sparkly thing, which really shouldn't raise any concerns at all.
It's just the Omega Ranger.
And follows it into a cave where it materializes into a relatively giant rhinoceros beetle with a really thick beard.
It's Larigo with horns.
This horror announces itself as Guru and explains that the bugs are all preparing to fight an invasion from another dimension.
Of course.
Well, yeah, it's a Metal Hero series.
The scientist, whose really awesome drug habit we must be witnessing the results of, offers that humans will help fight, but the beetle gnome monster thing has no time for humans.
I don't blame him.
The beetle monster looks like something from an 80s Saturday morning cartoon show.
Yeah, it kind of does. That's why I started calling it a gnome. At some unknown later time, apparently the scientist has related his experiences to others and managed to either escape or be released from a state-run mental hospital. And even more unlikely, other people seem to believe what he said.
And are spending vast amounts of money
to build powered battle suits to help fight. This is really not how I expected events to unfold in any way. And Fort Max, you say this is not one of the crazier Metal Heroes?
That's frightening.
That is correct.
Maybe we will watch an episode of Shiner one day. So we meet the bad guys in their flying stone claw fortress thing, sailing between dimensions. Tall dude makes some generic speech about conquering or something, but the details aren't really important. You've heard it all before.
And they actually are all the same suits from Beetleborgs.
Yes.
Well, better suits.
They send a force of impractical aircraft through the dimensional wall and attack Japan. Because everything does.
They're aircraft with penises.
They also choose that one double tower building that anything set in Japan tends to use as a special focus. And they decide to make it their frontline base. What is that building anyway?
Is it the building from Digimon Tamers?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, I used to know the name of that. It's a government building just used for offices and stuff.
Probably paid for by all the film crew by now.
So with a wave of his freaky hand, the tower is suddenly surrounded by desert and the invasion is underway.
Not just any desert. Bad CGI desert.
Well, yeah. And up close, it's a rock quarry. So true to their intentions, swarms of insects begin fighting back and somehow take down a lot of the aircraft. Later on, the ground forces are taking prisoners, and one of the grunts tries to smash a caged beetle a little girl is carrying, blaming it for the death of some of his comrades.
which actually is pretty much the only time any mook has done that ever.
Well, yes, it actually seems to imply that the...
Is there any reason why that girl's carrying a beetle around?
Because it's injured.
Okay, then.
But no, this seems to imply that the foot soldiers are not just, like, generically created troops. They're actually, like, individuals. Some sort of society of guys that look identical.
Or at least just for that one moment.
Well, yes. So this girl's brother intervenes as the foot soldier is about to beat on both girl and bug, and is joined by a lady marine biologist or dolphin trainer or something. I don't think the difference really matters, right?
The lady, and she's and it's Japan, so no.
They beat ass pretty well, and the scene shifts back to the science folks and their really plain-looking powered armor, which really isn't working too well right now. But Guru sparkles in and says that he has the crystallized life force of many millions of insects, which he'll infuse into the armors. Besides making them work right, it also gives them shiny new paint jobs and buggy embellishments.
It makes them metallic.
No, that's next season.
Guru's special fever dream friend from before gets chosen by the insect life force to wear the blue armor, while Red and Green beam off to find their own operators. Science Guy jumps out the window and transforms into Blue Beat and leaps into action.
Wonder what DC Comics would say about that. Don't they have trademark for Blue Beetle?
Though they probably didn't care in 1990-whatever.
I'm not sure if they did back then or not. Oh, this was in the 90s, wasn't it?
Yes. What year is this for, Max?
The year before we got it as Beetleborgs.
Which would be what year?
95.
Oh, same year as Power Rangers, the movie.
Yeah.
Convenient. Okay, so back around the captured tower, the girl's brother and that dolphin trainer have been captured and strung up, awaiting execution as an example to the other prisoners. But before the death blows can be struck, they're chosen by the bug spirits of the other two armors and transformed into the other two bee fighters whose names I forget.
G-Stag and Rettle.
Is G-Stag a rapper?
Well, they did choose him to be the black guy for Beetleborgs.
Well, black kid, that's a little different. So having no fighting experience on their own, except for that part earlier where they were kicking ass, the suits start moving themselves to join the fight as Blue Beat arrives. Then we jump into the trippy world of Pocket Dimension Battlefield as they get smacked around by the monster of the day, a floating cape, and a flying sword. Separately. Eventually, they figure to activate their special weapons and are able to defeat the monster whose Beetleborg equivalent I don't remember if it ever even appeared. And they escape the battle grid. But while they were gone, the foot soldiers have left with their human prisoners, and the bee fighters are left alone, able only to promise they'll find and save the captured people.
Then they're taken to another dimension and are attacked by bubbles.
Wasn't that the dimension they were taken to before?
One of them.
Yeah. It was all very, but really nothing can top Rhinoceros Beetle Gnome. I have to say, Bee Fighter was not quite as entertaining as Battle Fever.
Well, they were running out of drugs by then.
Right.
It's not as good stuff either.
It's all full of cornstarch.
But yeah, now. Well, the second episode has all the captured people being hypnotized by a song.
Well, why not?
Which also happened to essentially be the same plot of as the second episode of Scheider.
Of course it was. Just less druggy, right?
They never reuse plots in Sentai shows.
No, of course not.
Tim Curry.
Well, that reminds me, I meant to ask, is anybody subbing Gridman?
No.
Aw.
I know.
That would be interesting to see at least once.
I really wish someone would do that.
And maybe we should.
I have to say, too, the theme song for Bee Fighter was not, like, good.
Good?
You know, after watching Kabutak last year, I was kind of expecting more. Because they had a really catchy theme song.
とにかく全く記憶正しくかぶった。あいつもこいつも狙ってる勝負はいつもギリギリハラハラ。ゴールに輝くあの夢はおいらが絶対一番乗りさ。
Now, not as bad as the Beetleborgs theme, at least.
Well, that's also catchy. I don't remember the B-Fighter theme song at all.
And speaking of themes, the Battle Fever J theme sound, on the first part of it, sounds like a slightly different keyed version of the Spider-Man theme.
Doesn't all 70s music sound the same?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Funky.
Yeah. And with that weird popping sound.
I'm not complaining about that.
Well, that's just part of how it all sounds the same, though, is my point.
Yeah.
I mean, even the first Gundam theme song has that aspect. That was the same year as Battle Fever, actually. A lot of stuff happened in 1979.
It was a good year. Well, some of the best people on Earth were born in 79.
Well, a lot of stuff happened in 79, anyway. Who was born in 79?
Me.
Oh. So, yeah. That sure was a lot of stuff we watched.
Yep, let's never watch anything ever again.
We have to watch something. Oz will be back next week.
And probably Gokaiger too.
Yeah. And that'll have the debut of Gokai 6's Zord.
But I can't get it for another 2 weeks, damn it.
Or even longer if you run out of money.
Or the stores run out of Megazords.
Well, my next question was going to be whether he has a pre-order in already.
I do.
So that eliminates that problem.
Meanwhile, my money's probably going to be spent on the reissue Devastator.
Why?
Why?
Yeah, why?
No, seriously,
you're charging
why?
Approximately 12 times what Devastator is actually worth.
Yeah, those grocery store knockoffs have really devalued Devastator.
Because they're actually not bad knockoffs either.
I have the...
Well, they're no worse than the original toy. Besides, they're not reissuing Devastator in the right colors. It needs to be in orange. That's the only Devastator colors that matter, because that's the one I have.
It needs to be in movie Devastator colors.
Oh, I bet they will. I bet they will.
No, it needs to be in the non-com... What, I wonder if... I'd like eHobby to do the late G1 recolor.
With the gray parts?
With the gray parts and the no combiner
pieces. But they would still charge the same amount for the set.
No. They'd charge more. E-Hobby, remember?
Yeah, my point is they wouldn't charge less because less stuff is coming with it. So either way works.
They should call my Action Master Devastator.
No. To do that, they would have to sew one that they've glued together.
That's probably the only way he'd hold together.
Well, my G2 Devastator always held together pretty well.
Once you picked him up.
At least when it was new. Being that it was one of the few Transformers I had at the time, it got worn out pretty quick. Like your mom. But
Plus no. About the same, too.
And also, I'm from the same rumor source that months ago was saying that there was a reissue of Devastator in the works, also saying that there was a reissue of Scorponok in the works.
But Fort Max, people have been saying there's a reissue of Devastator in the works for 15 years. It's not really a new rumor. I wouldn't really associate it being true now with any other rumor.
Well, no, this is a rumor that was giving a specific late 2011 Encore Devastator, and this was before the Encore, and this was when
I've completely lost track of what Cormac was even trying to say.
Sets that came out.
But no, remember they did the recolor of G1 Ratchet and movie color, so they'll probably do a Devastator the same way.
Yep.
It's cheap and easy to do, and gives them
just
something
like your
else
mom.
To sell. Yeah. And gives them something else to sell, like
but,
your mom.
No, but what I'm saying is that if the reissue Scorponok thing is real, recolor it as Scorpulator.
Scorpulator was Action Master Devastator's Target Master partner.
Ah, okay.
How the hell do you know that?
No, no, what they need to do is reissue Scorponok as Double Punch. And never Black Zarok.
No, as Beast Wars Scorponok.
Better.
Which Ouch. Color?
Does it matter which
color? Beast Wars Sandstorm, then. Let's just go as obscure as we can.
But then what can we recolor as Beast Wars Grizzly 1?
As what?
Grizzly Chankla. 1.
As Beast Wars what?
Grizzly 1.
Polar Claw.
Barbarian.
Yeah. Really, Fort Max, how do you not know that?
No, I didn't hear what you understand what you were saying because you were mumbling. I was hearing as Beast Wars.
That's what I said. We were talking about something else, though, weren't we?
At this point, I don't think it matters.
We were talking about how I think there's actually going to be shows next week.
Yeah.
I hope they got shows next week. I don't think we could bear another episode like this.
This wasn't that bad.
Wasn't like our Godzilla episode.
Nothing is like the Godzilla episode.
Did we actually watch a Godzilla movie one time?
No. No, we just talked about Godzilla.
Just tossing that out there.
Which is also pretty much how our Mystic Knights episode wound up being.
The Mystic Knights episode was...
We upload that to Netflix, we could talk about Mystic Knights.
Yeah, really. We've had worse shows. Speaking of which, we need to do another musical.
I propose we all sing.
Well, I tried to do that last time, but nobody would go along with it.
I say what we do is we take the full closing song to Ghostager, record all of us singing it, the next fee, edit it down to just one of us singing each verse, and cut it to the next person.
Ghostager?
Did I say Ghostager? I meant Gokaiger.
Oh. Yes, you said Ghostager.
I meant Gokaiger.
Which, Ghostager.
Nobody ever means Ghostager.
Ghostager's ending song isn't terrible, but wouldn't be my first
yes,
choice.
It is.
Well, yeah, it's Ghostager.
Besides, why not do the engine rap instead?
Well, because the Gokaiger theme is more topical. Like the cream your mom puts on her vagina.
Yeah, but the full engine rap is like 18 minutes long.
That's true.
He could do worse.
It's insane.
And would the
As are
now
we.
Would this include sword clash rap?
No, that's
of
separate.
Course. No, you have to include that.
Well, it's not part of the 18-minute long engine rap, though.
I included in mine.
Then it's not 18 minutes anymore. Closer to 20, then.
I speed it up a little bit. Eh.
Exactly.
Well, since we're not doing the musical next week, let's see what's coming up. Next week on Superhero Time is... What's next week? The 27th?
Do we even know what we're doing?
Next week we're
no.
doing Rangers
Do we
Gone
ever?
Psycho.
Do we, are we just what? Doing the one episode or we're doing the whole miniseries?
Probably just the one episode. It's good enough, though.
Okay, the what?
Rangers Gone
Rangers
Psycho.
Rangers Gone Psycho.
Okay.
Fort Max, get a set of damn headphones.
Get the chili out of your ears.
Hey, Mickey needs to stop talking over XV, then.
He wasn't.
I'm not talking over XV.
I'm
okay,
talking over
buzzing.
Hey, Mickey. He's not buzzing. No, we're just going to do the one episode. We're just going to do Rangers Gone Psycho next week, but in August we're going to do Mission to Secret City, which has a Psycho Ranger cameo. So that counts, right?
I guess.
Yeah.
It's good enough for now.
Besides, we might end up talking about the whole Psycho Rangers series. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Well, we'll probably talk. Well, we'll definitely be talking about something other than the episode. So.
Well, I'm sure
we'll talk about laundry detergent for 20 minutes or something.
We could do worse, and we have.
This show is proof.
Oh, come on! This episode's not that bad. But no, I'm sure next week there will be like some talk of Psycho Douche and things like that, you know. Just the normal flow of conversation when we talk about Power Rangers in space.
How the Psycho Rangers are smarter than all the Rangers.
In
which is not hard.
Smarter than all the Rangers in two different series. At once.
Yeah. Alright then. Something to look forward to next week.
Yes.
Hooray.
Another thing to look forward to next week is that it's not this week.
That's always a plus.
It makes sense. Let's wrap this week up then.
Well, I'm not sure we've reached our full time yet. I promised 100 minutes, and damn it, we're going to deliver. Or more.
Well, then just keep recording.
I'll just leave a bunch of silence in it. Okay, well, that's our show for this week. Pray that we never have a week without any current shows ever again.
Or otherwise, that we'd have the sense to not try and film a show with nothing to talk about.
Meanwhile, in the upcoming week, we're just going to take off at random, even though there is things to talk about.
I.e. just, project every other week.
Just for balance. What do you mean every like other week? What do you mean every other week? We do a show every week.
I mean every other week besides this.
Peloton has a poor grasp of time. He's up there near the, where the Arctic Circle is, and so he only gets a day for half the year.
Well, if he's close enough to the North Pole, he gets a day every hour. Because it spins so short distance and everything.
Right.
Shut up. Okay, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
So long.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been Superhero Time. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Superhero Time is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.
I think that was a good show.
And Reveal the Shield's lug nut is awesome.
Yes, he is.
It is,
just
but
pray he stays together.
The ankles are kind of weak on mine.
Mm. Now, plus, he's even awesomer at $10.
Well, and Fort Max, you have Legends Megatron?
Yes.
Handgun. Either that or use the smallest Megatron or the Masterpiece accessory that came with Prime.
Actually, I need to get a second Legends Megatron. It's assuming I can never find one.
Why?
You won't.
Why do
so,
you...
I can remove all the gray paint to have a Legend Safety Megatron.
I was hoping it would be either that or to make a Browning out of it. But yes, I was very amused when I found out that most of the upper body is made of that orange plastic. It would make making Lava Bath Megatron even easier.
Alright, I'm signing out. See ya.
And okay. Also got,
So long.
And also found Solar Storm Grapple at the same place, well, at the same Ross, so...
Yeah. Well, whatever.
And also $20 Supreme Starscream.
Which Supreme Starscream?
No, movie. Not Supreme, Leader.
Movie Leader? That's okay, then.
Well, I'd probably pay $20 for the Cybertron one.
The Movie Leader toy is awesome.
I don't really care for the movie design, really. I mean, I dig F-22s, but I just
well,
don't like
no,
the robot
Well, no, I'm talking about the toy itself.
Yes, but if I don't like the design the toy is based on, I'm not going to like the toy that much, am I?
Just get the Deluxe. It's cheaper and just about as much fun.
Besides, if I just want a nice F-22, there's other options besides Leader Starscream. And if I was going to get a version of the Deluxe mold, I'd probably get that Thundercracker, because that's pretty nice looking.
And I think it's funny as hell that Skywarp is exclusive to Japan.
I'm just kind of upset that Vortex from Tomahawk is, too.
Yeah, that's not that great a mold, anyway.
I like it well enough. Plus, it's right now the only way to get the alternate head for the mold. I got alternate head from your mom.
For another nickel.
Because I wonder, though, being a movie toy in Japan, if they won't make more of those vortices.
They might.
Of course, I'm still waiting for them to make more of those frenzies and rumbles, damn it.
They won't. Because it pisses you off.
Well, they're doing another run of Henke Hot Rod.
Why?
Because they can make money from it?
Why is
there
such a demand for
Hot Rod?
They're
not doing another run of Henke Hot Rod. They're doing another run of Henke Rodimus.
Well, same difference, really.
Henke Hot Rod is the Hotshot mold.
Okay, that's true. I forgot about that.
And why is there such a demand for that mold now?
Protector Armor? I mean, for the 2 years leading up to the Protector Armor actually being released, the Rodimus mold's price in resale has just gone up and up and up and up. After I got the Battle in Space set, I sold my classic Rodimus for like $50.
I'm guessing we'll see the same effect with Reveal the Shield Prime now, too.
I hope so, because I have an extra one of those.